That's the Kansas City Six with Lester Young and Buck Clayton, recorded in 1938, one of the great recordings produced by Milt Gabler. Gabler died last week at the age of 90. We're going to remember him today with a 1979 interview. Gabler's first contribution to the music world was the Commodore Music Shop in New York City, which was a landmark for jazz fans and musicians. In the early 30s, when many of the recordings Gabler loved went out of print, he created America's first record label devoted to reissues. In 1938, Gabler decided to record new music and created the Commodore record label, which was the first independent jazz label. He cut about 90 new records for the label with a wide range of jazz performers, including Billie Holiday, Lester Young, Coleman Hawkins, Eddie Condon, and Jelly Roll Morton. In 1941, he started to also work as a producer for Decca Records. One of the Decca sessions he's responsible for is Bill Haley's Rock Around the Clock. Perhaps the most important recording he made for his own label was Billie Holiday's Strange Fruit, an anti-lynching ballad that other labels wouldn't touch. In 1979, Milt Gabler told me about the recording session.
Billie came in one afternoon. Columbia was only two blocks away, block and a half away, really. And she had a sad look on her face, and I asked her what the trouble was, and she said they wouldn't. The company, she was on a Vocalion label, wouldn't record Strange Fruit. And obviously it was the first great protest song ever written. And it was based on Lewis Allen's poem, anti-lynching poem. And it was a beautiful poem, and he set it to music. And she had been singing it at the Cafe Society downtown with Frankie Newton's band. And the company was afraid to record it. Obviously, they probably felt that the dealers in the lower regions of the USA might boycott them for recording it or something. Anyway, they didn't take the chance. And I said, Billy, if you can get permission from Columbia to record the song for Commodore, I'll make it immediately. I'll make it tomorrow.
Southern trees bear a strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root, black bodies swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant south, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh, then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for the sun to rot, for the tree to drop. Here is a strange and bitter cry.
Strange Fruit, sung by Billie Holiday, produced by Milt Gabler. I talk with Gabler about another session he produced with Benny Goodman and pianist Mel Powell.
Mel Powell kind of grew up at the Commodore, and he used to come in, and he was taking piano lessons at that time. He started when he was a young student to study classical music, but then he got interested in jazz, and he was taking lessons from Willie the Lion Smith, who was hanging around the store a lot at that time also. And one day Irving Culloden came in, and Jess Stacy was leaving the Goodman Band, and he said, "Who can I get on piano?" And I said, "I got a kid that comes in here that will just be fantastic. He knows every note Jess ever played, and he's a very competent young musician." And he said, "Who?" I said, "His name is Mel Powell." And he went over and he auditioned and he got the gig right away. And he was working with Benny and starting to do arranging for him. He did quite a few important arrangements for the Goodman Band. And he was cooking up a Commodore session for me to be done with members of the Goodman Orchestra. And they were running down "The World is Waiting for the Sunrise" during a 5-minute break or so on a Goodman rehearsal time. And Benny heard the arrangement, and he came over and he started to play with them, to sit in and play with in Mel's arrangement, and he loved it. He says, "What is this for?" Mel says, "For Milt at the Commodore." Benny said, "I want to play it. I want to play on the record." And he was a Columbia artist. Benny was such a big name, I didn't dare say, go ask Columbia for permission. I figured if Benny would take a chance to record for me, I'd go ahead and do the date. And sure enough, the day of the session came and Benny came into the studio. I recorded this in Studio B at Decca, I remember. And he showed up and I was tickled. Well, I had known Benny since he used to come into the Commodore and do studio work and pit band work. And he used to buy sporting goods from me and stuff like that. And we had a great rapport. And sure enough, he showed up for the date. And on the label, I was afraid that I couldn't say Benny Goodman Clarinet. I called him Shoeless John Jackson on the original Commodore label. And that became a very famous record because everyone knew who Shoeless John Jackson was the minute you heard the first bar of the clarinet. So let's play this. It's one of the great Commodore records, which I hope one day will wind up in the Record Academy Hall of Fame.
Done a number of takes for some of the records that you've produced. When the musicians got done playing a tune, if you didn't think it was quite right, how many times would you let yourself do that and ask them to do it again before, or did you always wait till you felt, oh, that's it, that is a take?
Get it on the first take, because that's always the best, or the second even might be better than the first. But first you run the tune down. We had to do that in those days because you cut on wax or acetate. And you were limited as to playing time. The average 10-inch record ran 2:50 to 3 minutes and 15 or 20 seconds. And that's why I did the first long Commodore jazz concert. Jam session number 3 was "Four Sides of a Good Man is Hard to Find" on 12-inch. I wanted to get a long performance like they would do in a nightclub, but it's one of our famous recordings, but there was no tape. And I had to stop each time and start again on this part two. Anyway, you're limited by the amount of playing time. So you run it down, time a chorus,
Say it runs 40 seconds. You say, well, we'll get 40, we'll get three choruses on it. Then you say, first chorus, you play the tune. Second chorus, you give it to Pee Wee, then to Bobby, then to Jess Stacy. Then you go back to the ensemble or a half a chorus out. You have to time it to fit on the record. Some good takes are lost because it runs too long. But you run it down, and when you use musicians like we used on Commodore, they're all such pros, you know. It's like a great football team or a great basketball team. They know what they're all doing, and often if we picked out the songs, Eddie and I, they would play them in the room so they'd get real familiar with them. And when they came to the session on Saturday, they would be ready. You'd only need one or two takes.
What would you have for the musicians? What kind of environment did you try to, you know, create for them?
Well, I knew most of them liked to drink, so I would have a couple of bottles on a date, but I wouldn't open them until we had two numbers done.
Uh-huh.
And because, you know, you'd want them to get the four songs in.
Milt Gabler recorded in 1979. He died last week at the age of 90. This is Fresh Air.